When you know that you are queer, but your favorite drink is beer, that's gayish. You can bottom without stopping, but you can't stand going shopping, that's gayish. Oh, gayish, you're probably gayish. Well, life's just too short for narrow stereotypes, so it's gayish. We're also gayish. It's gayish with Mike and Kyle.
Hello, everyone in the podcast universe. This is Gayish,
the podcast with a soggy bottom.
Oh, Mary Berry.
Oh, I miss her.
Miss her too. Yeah. I'm Mike Johnson.
I'm Kyle Getz.
We're here to bridge the gap between sexuality and actuality.
And today, we're gonna talk about X-Men.
We're gonna talk about X-Men.
Yep.
Oh my God, Kyle.
What
have we done?
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see in about an hour 15, what we've done.
Oh my God. Okay. Well. Okay. Well. Let's talk about all of the anxiety around this episode after we do this part, which is, here's the news.
Shut your mouth hole. It's time for your ear holes. News. News. News.
Oh my God. Okay. News the first, Kyle.
Okay.
We have to talk about this TikTok thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So the United States House of Representatives has voted to ban TikTok. That passed by an overwhelming majority. It was 352 votes in favor, just 65 votes against. So that's, I mean, it's not just the Republicans, right? It's right. The Republicans control the House, but it's Democrats and Republicans. So what the bill actually does is it would remove TikTok, owned by the Chinese company ByteDance, from app stores in the United States unless ByteDance agrees to sell it to an American company.
Hmm.
Which, okay. Like, doesn't that just become a math problem for them of like, is the amount of money that we would get from selling it more than the amount that we would lose if US folks couldn't? And what if it's already installed? Just because it's removed from the app store doesn't mean
it isn't removed. I think that makes it so it can't work on your phone.
All right. Well,
I don't know.
Anyway, it has to pass the Senate before it goes to President Joe Biden. Joe Biden has said that he would sign the legislation if it makes it to his desk. And there's a bunch of different ways to like look at this angle. But the reason I wanted to bring it up on our show, because we talk about gay shit.
Yeah, what's gay about this?
LGBTQ plus TikTokers have been warning now since the ban started to make news that it will have a, quote, disproportionate effect on the queer community. The idea is that crowdsourced social media based content like TikTok is far more permissive when it comes to queer representation and queer issues than other mainstream media outlets. And therefore, it will hurt us more than it will hurt them for TikTok to go away.
It's harder for us to talk about and get our own news because less mainstream publications talk about our news, and it's harder for us to form communities, and there are a lot of challenges that social media, virtual social media, helps resolve.
Yep, exactly right. So non-binary TikToker and best-selling author Jeffrey Marsh, who has 700,000 followers on TikTok, says that they think, quote, it may have a disproportionate effect on the queer community because we look to the internet to see representations of ourselves while we wait for the film and TV industry to catch up to telling our story.
Mm.
It's been clear for a long time that TikTok is a haven for transphobia and LGBTQ plus hatred, so it wouldn't necessarily be sad if those things went away. But of course, it's also a place where we see ourselves and can connect, and for that to end would be quite sad.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a rough like balance between we get our own unique visibility through this, and also some of these social media platforms are bastions for homophobia and transphobia.
Yep. Yep. That's like that time that like we were discussing whether we wanted to be on Spotify or not.
Mm.
And Spotify begged us not to go because we're so critical to their success.
Yeah, exactly.
But also like we're being silly. And the idea of like, that's also a queer voice, however small we are, a queer voice no longer being available on a really big platform.
Yeah.
So to leave wasn't going to hurt Spotify, but to stay was going to benefit people.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. If TikTok went away, it'll make me feel less bad for not being on TikTok. That'd be one benefit.
That's true. We have been meeting for a while now to talk about what to do about our lack of presence on TikTok, and this solves that problem for us.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
we were just saying before we started recording, we were going to make Derek get super jacked and do all of our shows shirtless.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I still like that as a plan, but we don't have to for TikTok.
Yeah, not for TikTok though.
Okay, news the second.
Great.
On March the 9th, a bar called The Precinct had video of two men urinating on their employees' entrance. So their post on Instagram, it's Precinct DTLA, it's downtown Los Angeles, said, two bros walk into a bar. Last Saturday night, these two party boys decided to show everyone what not to do at Precinct. They first left the bar with full cocktail glasses in hand, then decided to go to our employee entrance, whip out their dicks, and piss all over it together. When done, they rounded the corner where one of the managers spotted the drinks and tried to take them away. The big one reacted by physically assaulting him, throwing him to the ground. Precinct is a safe space for all. Let's have a good time. Don't be a dick. Oh, yeah. We also have several bathrooms.
Is Precinct a gay bar?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, the post did not reveal the identities of the two people. However, RuPaul alumnus Willem was one of the people that quickly identified them, recognized the pair from what they saw in the video, and other people said it too, but Willem is the most famous of the people that noticed. It is a Crescenta Valley Town Council member, an openly gay council member of the city of Crescenta Valley. His name is Chris Kilpatrick, and he ultimately has had to now resign from being a member of the city council.
Isn't that the name of the guy in NSYNC too? Chris Kilpatrick?
Oh, I don't know. Is it?
I don't know.
It doesn't look like him.
Okay, different person.
If it is him, he maybe has a mutant power of some kind that lets him change his appearance. But yeah, this is just the like, okay. People who pee outside, I'm all for that. Pee outside all you want to, but don't pee on things that other humans have to interact with.
Yeah. You know. When you very first started this story, in a bar, two men peed, and it was like, where? Okay. I thought it was going to go a different direction. Pee on objects only when requested.
And objects includes people.
And objects includes people.
Unlike what our DM told us yesterday when we were playing Dungeons & Dragons.
A creature is not an object.
Ugh, it is, though. I'll die on that hill, Kyle.
I might be on the DM side.
Okay.
Okay.
News the last?
Yeah.
This one is crazy. We live in the future, Kyle. We live in the future. Researchers at Oregon Health and Science University have advanced a technique that can turn a skin cell into an egg.
What?
Signaling promise for same-sex couples looking to start families. So they are doing, they're furthering the understanding of in vitro gametogenesis, which is making eggs and sperm outside of the body. And apparently they've figured out how to do it. So they take a donated egg, yank the nucleus out of it, and put the nucleus of a skin cell in there, and then they have to do a bunch of other magic to it, but basically once it splits, you get two eggs with half of the DNA in each of them, which is just what eggs are to begin with, and it means that we can now make eggs, and that's sort of the barrier for gay men to cis gay men to like procreating on their own. I mean, you still need a uterus, obvi, but like this technique, if it bears fruit, so to speak, would make it possible for two men to have a baby.
Huh.
What?
This is just like, now I have to worry about my skin cells being stolen to make a baby out of?
Oh my God, I would be so flattered.
Someone stole your skin cells?
Somebody like, I mean, stalked me so that they could clone me.
Don't your skin's like falling off all the time. We leave skin cells everywhere.
Yeah, but I think those are dead ones.
Oh, okay.
These have to be live ones.
Okay. Okay.
This process is similar to cloning and is, this process is what was part of creating Dolly the sheep.
Yeah.
Named after Dolly Parton.
Mm-hmm.
Paula Amato, who is the co-author of the report and a professor of obstetrics and gynecology at OSHU, said, quote, "The advantage of our technique is that it avoids the long culture time it takes to reprogram the cell. Over several months, a lot of harmful genetic and epigenetic changes can happen. This technique is years away from being ready for clinical use, but could assist women who passed reproductive age or those who are infertile. It could also be used for same-sex couples, giving them the possibility of having children that are genetically related to both parents."
Hmm, that's wild.
Yeah. We live in the future, Kyle.
We do.
So maybe boyfriend and I will have our own kids someday. You never know.
Yeah. Ooh, crazy.
Yeah. That's the news.
Speaking of people who we would love to genetically clone.
Whose skin cells I'm going to steal.
I want to thank the following new Patreon members. Thank you to LJ.
LJ.
Yeah.
Thank you for making your life easy.
So easy to pronounce that. Unless it's like, well, no, my name is pronounced Olj. You know.
Leje.
It's French. Thank you to Shane Britwhistle.
Okay. All right.
Bert Whistle.
Bert.
Shit. Thank you to Shane Burt Whistle. And thank you to Sir Zenitram. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Ooh, Mike's taking off his jacket for that name.
It got warm in here.
If you want ad-free episodes a day early, if you want to support the show, if you want to get a lot of other bonus stuff, go to patreon.com/gayishpodcast.
Do it.
Do it.
Okay, Kyle.
Okay, Mike, why are we talking about X-Men?
It's all Derek's fault.
It's all Derek's fault. Derek requested this episode.
Our producer Derek is a comic book gay.
Yes.
And wants us to do this.
Yeah. And so we acquiesce.
Yeah.
At quite some convincing.
Derek, percentage chance we're going to fuck this up. Yell it.
Zero.
Zero.
Okay. Well, we pay him. So I don't know why.
All right.
I don't. Yeah.
Okay. The fear always is whenever we're talking about an area that is a fandom, I think I get nervous because fans are crazy.
Yeah.
Our fans are crazy.
Yeah.
Fans of other things are crazy, sometimes crazier.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, before we go into this, I'm sort of serious here, everybody. Kyle and I are going to talk about what we're going to talk about. And we're probably not, almost certainly not going to talk about what you want us to talk about.
Yeah.
That's just how this shit goes. Make your own podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Make a comic book podcast. Yeah. There's no possible way to cover all the gay shit that appears in X-Men. So we have to find the stuff that we latch onto and care about as outsiders looking in.
Yep.
And we pick some stuff to talk about.
Yep.
And that's going to be what this episode is.
Yep. Also level setting. I know almost nothing, and I think it's more than you.
That's probably fair,
right?
That is probably fair.
Which is just to say that, like, I like might fuck something up, pronunciations. Like, I might confuse characters in a thing. Like, I just be nice, everybody.
Yeah.
Be nice and kind.
Whenever someone gets really excited about a topic, I'm always like, oh no, that means you're gonna hate that episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you were really passionate about a topic, I presume you will hate us discussing it because we will mess it up. Or
I have PTSD about the fashion episode,
like
which we really should do again.
I don't think it's going to get better. I don't think we're going to suddenly know a lot about fashion.
Well, that's true. But like maybe we could like drill down a little bit or something. Like, yeah. Instead of doing all of fashion, maybe we could just do like handbags or something.
Okay.
Like
that's a good idea.
I'm just stalling.
Okay.
Do you like comics? Do you like the X-Men?
I used to watch X-Men. I used to play the video game. I used to collect the cards.
Like,
yeah.
You know more than I did then.
That means I'd have to remember it.
Oh, well, okay.
Which that's always the trouble with me.
That's true.
So I used to, like, growing up, was really into them.
Hmm.
But now, like, I don't know. I saw that a couple of the X-Men movies. Mm-hmm. Those are forever ago now, but mm-hmm. And liked those. I like the concept. I like the idea of them. I just am not like, I don't read comics or I don't follow any of the newer movies or don't follow, you know, this whole new release that's coming up with X-Men 97.
Yeah.
I don't follow any of that. So
yeah. Yeah.
I like them in theory and don't pursue it at all.
Yeah.
What about you?
I did not follow it as a kid. Like, I would read comic books like when they were around at the dentist office or whatever, but like I maybe we were too poor to have access to them. I don't know, but I just didn't really get captivated by the whole thing. But my ex-husband was a big fan. And so a lot of what I know and was exposed to was through that relationship, which we'll talk more about that later, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is one of those places where I always enjoy it. That's not true. Sometimes I'm like not enjoying myself, but like for the most part, I really like this stuff. I understand the appeal. It just never hooked me the way that like Star Trek did.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just, and maybe it's just that like I've put all my eggs in that basket or something.
Yeah.
But also, these are fandoms that, like, the Venn diagram between, like, people who are into comic books and people who are into Star Trek is, like, there's an overlap there.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, you could be into this if you wanted to. Maybe this will kick it off. Maybe X-Men 97 will reel you in, and this will be your new fandom.
Maybe.
Probably not.
Probably not. I'm so busy. I don't have time for more content in my life. Well, I'm going to talk to you about the history of the X-Men.
Okay.
So, do you know what year they started?
No.
No, okay. 1963.
Wow.
And right out of the gate, one of the reasons for them starting and starting the way that they did lends itself to this conversation about, like, are the X-Men gay? Is it just a gay allegory? How gay are they? Gay, gay, gay.
Yeah.
So, Spider-Man, the Hulk, Thor, Iron Man, and the Fantastic Four creator Stan Lee wanted to create another group of superheroes, but didn't want to have to explain how they got their powers. In 2004, he said, quote, "I couldn't have everybody bitten by a radioactive spider or exposed to a gamma ray explosion. And I took the cowardly way out. I said to myself, why don't I just say they're mutants? They're born that way."
I wonder if "born that way" was a phrase that was in the common vernacular at that point.
I think maybe Lady Gaga's song is actually about comic book heroes.
About mutants?
Yeah. we could say that.
Yeah, we could. We can say whatever we want.
But yeah, the X-Men are superheroes in this universe that lives under the general umbrella of the Marvel comic universe. And it is exactly as Stan Lee said. There were all of these reasons why people got their powers, but the whole grounding here is that there's this thing called the X gene, and that's your DNA made you into a mutant. Hmm. And they have different levels of power, and they have different things that they can do. But really, it fairly quickly, again in 1963, sort of paired off into two camps of mutants. There's Professor Xavier, who runs this school for mutants and is more or less the good guys. Mm-hmm. And then there's Magneto and all of the mutants that are the evil ones, the bad guys. And it's important to break that down because of history stuff. That is really what I want to go into here. So they got explicitly queer in the 90s, and I'm going to tell that story in a little bit. They couldn't until then because of a thing that you're going to talk about next.
Yep.
But people have noticed a couple of things. First, the idea of Professor Xavier and Magneto being analogs to the Black Rights Movement, and how Professor Xavier represents the Martin Luther King version of the fight for Black equality, and Magneto represents Malcolm X and the more sort of militant kind of fight for equality. And lots of people have written on this as a subject. Have you ever heard any of this
No.
before? I mean, the idea is that MLK was like, you know, we need to be dress well and be good citizens, and that pacifistic demonstration is the way to reach our goals. And then Malcolm X of the Black Panthers and all of that was more of a nonconformist sort of violent overtones to it sometimes, depending on who you ask, like approach to fighting for Black rights. Does that all make sense?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, okay. So another, I find this super interesting. Another thing that people have pointed out, though, is we had a very similar vibe in the early days of the gay rights movement. So just after the Lavender Scare, but before Stonewall, we had Frank Kameny and all of the people that were created the homophile movement, the Mattachine Society, and all of that. And we had others at the same time sort of fighting over what should the face of gay people be.
Right.
What sort of posture should we take as we fight for gay rights in this country? So there were Frank Kameny, who made everybody, like, you weren't allowed to protest or picket unless you met his dress code. Do you remember me talking about this before?
Yeah, I do, which is still wild to me. I mean, I understand the idea behind it of, like, let's show them we're regular, normal people that can fit in.
But the men had to wear a coat and tie. The women had to wear dresses and that a very professional look. And the idea was that we needed to look like straight society as much as possible to elevate our acceptability to them.
All right.
There were other folks who took a more sort of violent or militant approach. You've got the folks at Stonewall, for instance, Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson and all of those people who were like, no, we're going to throw bricks at police officers who are being dickbags and we're going to be our gay ass freak flag flying selves. Fucking deal with it. All of that is very much part of the vibe between the Professor Xavier mutants and the Magneto mutants. And that sort of evolved over time, but really has become sort of the central way, lens through which we can see X-Men as a gay analog.
Hmm.
So some other things that people have pointed to sort of further analyze this Frank Kameny versus the other kinds of gay rights leaders in history. The X-Men, the Professor Xavier ones, when they're out on the town, when they go out, when they're hanging out with non-mutants, they go by their sort of their closeted names. They go by Bobby or Hank or Jean or Scott or Warren. And when they put their uniforms and masks on, they're Iceman, Beast, Marvel Girl, Cyclops, and Angel. And they have their normal and their queer lives compartmentalized.
Interesting.
And that was, again, very much part of what Frank Kameny was trying to do. But then until 1983, Magneto only had that name. There was no like other name associated with that character. And all of the Magneto mutants, Toad was Toad, the Blob was the Blob, Mastermind was Mastermind, and their lives and mutant identities were fully integrated. Now there are some, you know, there are always exceptions to every rule. You take a fandom that is this big and has been around this long and has this many comics, like they're going to contradict each other.
Yeah.
And
I never thought about that. Like, that's really interesting. Like dividing up your life into who my name and who I was before and after and being able to be like your mutant self with people. That's very gay.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It really is. And I think that I sense that tension in our movement even now of those of us that are the out and proud and loud folks and the just, I just want to live my life and I'm willing to fly under the radar in order to do it.
Yeah.
Folks.
Yeah.
So the Uncanny X-Men was basically canceled in 1970, but so it had that first 7-year run. But then about 5 years later, it had a giant-sized, that's in quotes, giant-sized relaunch in 1975. And they brought on a new writer named Chris Claremont, who would make X-Men into what would become Marvel's most valuable property. And he really pushed on these themes. And he wasn't squeamish about featuring non-white, non-American, non-Christian, and even non-heterosexual, eventually, characters. People have pointed out that even in the early days that Mystique and Destiny were pretty obviously a lesbian couple. I know you're going to talk about them.
Talk more about them.
Yeah. But he really started this thing of having events in real life be sometimes on the nose, mirrored in what was true for the comic book characters. But let's sort of move on, because we're in the space now of like why it was difficult and why you had to like sort of dance around the subject of a lot of stuff, and it was because of the code. So why don't you hop into that?
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about the Comics Code Authority. So a little bit, I have a tiny bit of history in the comic book industry began in the 1930s, so before the X-Men, and the genre really took off because of Superman, whose debut was Action Comics number one in 1938.
Wow.
In 19...
That's so long ago.
That's so long ago. Coming up on 100 years ago.
I just always think of Superman, like, I think of all of these things as being, like, animated full color comics, and that makes me assume that they're, like, you know, the 50s or later or whatever, but that's just not true. Snow White was in color, and that was 1930 something, I think. So like, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. It's wild. It's so long ago. In 1948, a psychiatrist named Dr. Frederick Wortham began writing and speaking about how, mass media and especially comic books could corrupt American children.
Sure.
So he specifically targeted horror comic books and, to a lesser degree, superhero stories.
Horror.
Oh, yeah. horror comic books and superhero stories for containing subversive messages about things like crime, violence, loose sexual morals, anarchy, homosexuality, and confusing gender roles. So he stirred up a lot of hate and fear within the country.
You said this was the 50s?
48 is when he started. So, yeah.
I mean, that's early. He's a pioneer of hate, Kyle.
Yes. He's one of the first people to say that video games are going to make your kids shoot people.
Yeah.
So there were groups of concerned parents who believed what he was saying and believed that this threatened traditional American values. Mm-hmm. And some of them even held comic book burnings.
Mm, sure. Yeah.
Which anytime you're the one, if you're the one burning something, you're probably wrong.
Yeah, it's true.
Unless you're camping. Like if you're burning a piece of media, sorry, you're the wrong person.
Yeah.
That's just how the way life goes. In 1954, he published the book Seduction of the Innocent, where he said, quote, "I think Hitler was a beginner compared to the comic book industry."
My God.
Holy shit,
right? Talk about histrionic horse shit. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, what's that rule on the internet that like once you invoke the name of Hitler, like your argument is over? Godwin's law? Is that Godwin's law?
Mike is looking it up now. Yeah, a little bit of overkill on that that comparison there.
Godwin's law is, as an online discussion group grows longer, the probability of a comparison involving Nazis or Hitler approaches one.
Yeah. He spoke before the Senate Subcommittee on Juvenile Delinquency.
Sure.
And testified that comic books were a major cause of juvenile crimes.
Sure. Yeah.
Come to find out, like later people found out he was kind of bending data to his own will and making up stuff.
Sure.
So he was not totally on the up and up with the actual data supporting.
I want
his
to bend data to my will. Ooh. Star Trek.
wrong one. Back to X-Men. Sorry, okay. Mike. Back Got to it. X-Men. The Comic Code Authority formed in 1954 in order to kind of circumvent, to avoid government regulation. They were basically like, no, we got this. We'll do it. So it was formed by the Comic Magazine Association of America. And some of the rules, they had a lot of rules about like what was allowed. You can't show crime or show it in a positive light. Like there's a lot of really specific rules around what you could show and why. And some of the rules around gay stuff were, there are three bullets that this article I read pulled out as far as gay stuff. First is illicit sex relations are neither to be hinted at or portrayed. Violent love scenes as well as sexual abnormalities are unacceptable.
Do you want to have illicit, do you want to have illicit sex relations with me?
I thought you'd never ask. Illicit sex relations, yeah.
That's the most clinical, unsexy way of saying ass sex I've ever heard.
They also said the treatment of love romance stories shall emphasize the value of the home and the sanctity of marriage.
Sure.
Which, like, that's a lot to put on a story to say you have to tell stories about this, about the sanctity of marriage. Like,
yeah.
And then sex perversions or any inference to same is strictly forbidden. So we were surely sex perversions at the time.
Yeah. I mean, guilty.
But that's not just because you're gay. My sex perversion has nothing to do with the fact that I'm gay.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until 1989 that the code was altered and dropped rules against LGBT content.
Okay. When was that?
1989.
Okay. Yeah.
So there were people that were trying to write things, and I'll talk a little bit more about Mystique and Claremont, the guy that you mentioned, of like people like had ideas about creating characters that were queer, but they had to do it without any obvious references to it, or else they wouldn't carry the little stamp that goes on books that fit this, comic books that fit this, and then that would risk them not being carried or sold.
Yep. It smacks of the Hays Code, right? Similar mechanism of regulating the film industry by giving them a bunch of rules about like what was good for America and Americans.
Yep.
And even though it was all absolute utter horseshit.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, it's interesting that 1989 is the time there, because this one author said what finally cinched the status of the X-Men as a crypto queer narrative was HIV/AIDS.
Mm.
And that's the zone, right?
Yeah.
What the pinnacle of which was a little bit late, and people have criticized them for being a little bit late here, but in 1993, a story by Scott Lobdell and Fabian Fabian, they introduced the Legacy Virus. And before his defeat and apparent demise, the villain Strife releases an airborne plague which exclusively infects mutants. Once contracted, the disease is invariably fatal. Mutants across the world drop dead, covered in purplish blisters, which is analogous to the lesions symptomatic of HIV.
Oof.
And Kaposi sarcoma.
Yeah.
And the public doesn't understand why, and the fear that the disease could jump from the mutant population and infect baseline humans doesn't make mutants any more popular. And it's just like a barely thinly veiled, mutants are gay people, they have AIDS, non-mutants are freaking out and treating them like shit as a result and being hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah. That does not seem like too big of a metaphor.
And during the same sort of period, slightly before that, actually, there's a religious villain named Reverend Stryker.
They were allowed to have a religious villain.
And there's a paramilitary group that was named the Right.
Okay.
But they reflect the politically ascendant new Christian rights obsession with quashing the gay rights movement.
Mm.
All of that leads to a couple of things. Sorry, this isn't exactly what we talked about, but it's what I want to talk about now.
Do it.
So in 1994, in the letters page at the back of the Uncanny X-Men number 317, they published a note from a reader whose brother had died of leukemia. He was 19 years old and an avid reader of X-Men comics and gay. Shortly before he passed, he came out to his sister, and her letter, signed "A Sister Who Misses Her Brother," was printed in full, occupying the entire column, which stands out because they usually did like shorter snippets. But she wrote, quote, "He was ashamed. It was as if he was confessing a deep sin, needing some kind of absolution so he could die. Despite the other pain he was obviously feeling, I could see the suffering of self-loathing in his face. He hated himself because he was gay. I asked him if he ever loved anyone, and he told me he couldn't. I asked him what he meant by couldn't, but he was unable to put it into any other words than just couldn't. For the first time, I saw my brilliant little brother paralyzed by fear. Of what he was really afraid, I don't know. Maybe he was afraid of being hated by my parents, burning in hell, being teased by society, or just losing the few friends he had. For reasons I can't remember, he told me that his sexual orientation was one of the reasons he had always liked the X-Men, because they were mutants, hated and feared by society for just being what they were. I asked him which characters were gay, thinking that after he was gone, maybe I'd learn about my brother through them. He said he didn't know of any gay characters in the X-Men. It didn't matter to him, he said. I could see why. He was the blue-furred beast that people glared at. He was rogue, afraid to touch other people. He even told me that he was Iceman, bragging to his friends about women that he lusted after, but really insecure deep down inside. Now that he's gone, I have his comic books. Which Iceman turned out to be gay later on. But this is about the time that they did actually broach having a actual gay character. So
that letter is heavy.
Yeah, it's heavy. It's heavy. But well, let's not move on from it too quickly then. Like, even before there were explicitly gay characters or recently introduced explicitly gay characters, here's a person dying. I mean, it was leukemia, but a lot of HIV AIDS folks got printed as leukemia deaths. Not saying it was HIV AIDS. It could have been just leukemia, but this gay kid very much identified with X-Men and their plight. And this was the mid 90s.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like not just the mutant part themselves of, you know, being unusual because they're mutants, but like some of the powers specifically, like can't touch anyone. Like,
yeah.
That's really deep.
Yeah.
It's really meaningful that you could find connection in some of those.
Yeah. This idea, like Rogue is an interesting character. I forget who played her. Was it Claire Danes? Anna Paquin played her. And that is such a, could be viewed through the lens of HIV AIDS as the way that we treated those people at that time.
Right.
Right. Like afraid to touch them, or they afraid to touch other people, because we didn't really know how it was transmitted. Or even after we did know medically, there was still a lot of misinformation out in popular society about how that disease operated.
Yeah.
And so it's really easy to sort of look at her, because the character can't touch other mutants because that she takes on their power.
Yeah.
I'm probably oversimplifying that, but it very much like have sex with your gloves on, girl, because
full body condom.
Yep. Okay. So that boy that wrote that letter was wrong. The letter was, it was in 1994. There was an explicitly gay character in the X-Men universe named Northstar, who was made explicitly gay in 1992. So it had just been in the past couple of years. There's enough comics out there in the world. Like, it's almost impossible to read everything and be up to speed on everything. And it was new. It was fresh. It was new. It was happening at that stage of history. I wanted to tell you a little bit about Northstar's life. His name was Jean-Paul Beaubier. He was created by Chris Claremont and a guy named John Byrne. His first appearance was in X-Men 120, which was April of 1979. He was a member of the Canadian superhero team Alpha Flight, alongside his twin sister, Jean-Marie Beaubier. Her name was Aurora. He didn't really have a personality. He was described mainly as French-Canadian, which, gay.
that's your personality, is French-Canadian.
gay. John Byrne, the co-creator, said as early as 1988 in interviews that he wanted one of the Alpha Flight characters to be gay. And he boldly stated in an interview again in 1988 that he had created the first gay superhero, Northstar, but was confined by the comics code, which wouldn't be overturned until the next year after he gave that interview. But so he would try to subtly convey Northstar's queerness in ways that he was allowed to. So there was a bunch of subtext, right? So in Alpha Flight number 7 in 1983, he reunites with a, quote, old friend. They were real good friends, Kyle, named Raymond. But they strongly hinted at their past romantic relationship in the content there. But the pivotal moment arrived in Alpha Flight 106 in 1992, written by Scott Lobdell. North Star was finally allowed to state, "I am gay." Mm. The first time that that happened in Marvel history. The mainstream press kind of went nuts about it. The Alpha Flight series was not particularly popular or exceptionally popular, but that issue sold out within a week.
Wow.
And yeah, that and then it's not like it, unlike Ellen, that didn't kill his career. he started his own 4-issue miniseries in 1994. He rejoined the X-Men in 2002. He developed an unrequited crush on Iceman, who came out as gay later after the fact. But they did a like, he had the hots for Iceman, which who wouldn't? God damn.
I mean, right?
And then the kind of shit that can only happen in comic books. I love this sentence. In 2005, three different versions of North Star were killed off within the space of a month, including the main 616 universe version, which that's like the prime universe.
Okay.
Like that's where we are now, or the real place. Anyway, but yeah, that's the first actual gay X-Man. And I just think it's so interesting to look at it through the lens of society is changing. HIV/AIDS is causing this big pushback against gay people. There's the comic book code that prevents them from actually exploring it in a meaningful human sort of way. All of that sort of changes at the same time. And almost immediately, within 5 years anyway, we're arriving on the scene in a formal, explicit way in these comics.
Yeah. What was his power? Do you know?
I don't know what his power was.
Oh, okay.
Derek, do you know what his power was? No.
Was his power French Canadian gay?
He was so Canadian. He could make bacon.
He could apologize so well, you really felt it in your heart.
What were North Star's powers? I'm just going to ask. North Star's powers were he could travel at superhuman speeds, fly, and project photonic energy blasts. And his twin sister Aurora possessed similar abilities.
Huh. I don't know if it's going to be like some kind of gay ability or like, you know, he shot
rainbows
from his butt. Yeah. I want to tell you about Mystique.
Yeah, let's talk about Mystique.
Mystique.
Lesbians.
The first appeared. She's actually bisexual.
Okay, great.
She first appeared in Ms. Marvel number 16 in April 1978. She is one of the.
She's older than me.
She is much. She is a shapeshifter, so she can shift the formation of her biological cells at will to change her appearance and voice. So she can actually constantly rejuvenate her body's cells, and therefore, even though she's lived over 100 years, she still looks young.
Mm-hmm. Jealous.
I know, right? If only.
If I could look however I wanted to and live forever, I would be a sex machine, Kyle.
I would also, though, be like so overweight in my actual form, because I'd be like, I can eat whatever I want and then just shift into. Yeah,
totally fine.
It'd be about a bad combination. Her earliest appearance dates back to around 1900, where she lived in a male guise as a consulting detective. So basically she was Sherlock Holmes.
Great. I love that for her.
Yep.
Them.
Her? I don't know.
Him?
That's part of the discussion. So she was one of their...
What are Mystique's pronouns?
What are Mystique's pronouns? And what... Yeah, what... How do you... Anyway, okay. She's bisexual. She's the wife of Destiny, whose real name is Irene Adler. A blind mutant with precognitive abilities that allow her to predict future events.
Mm-hmm.
Mystique is actually the biological father of the X-Men hero Nightcrawler.
Okay. Is that why he's purple too?
Because she actually morphed into Azazel, a male mutant.
And a demon. Yeah.
And that's part of why. So originally it was thought that Azazel was the father, but it was actually Mystique who morphed into Azazel. And because she changes at the biological level, then she has all the, she can jizz basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And impregnated Destiny.
God, that reminds me of Misfits. I told you this story already off the air, but the Misfits was that British show about the people that get powers randomly.
Yeah.
And there's the dude that could change his gender. He just like become a girl, and mm-hmm. he became fond of jerking off as a dude, but then because dudes can only come once, he would turn it into lady form and then keep jerking off because like women can come more times. But then he accidentally got himself pregnant because he had jizz on his hand.
Yeah.
Like the implications of that, like who thinks of this shit? Because it's fascinating and I love it.
It is fascinating. And like, what does that represent? Like, does Mystique represent someone who is like, is she non-binary, but she like is converting into people with unique genders mm-hmm. each time? Mm-hmm. Is she still she and she can just become a dude, but she had sex as a dude mm-hmm. like that?
That's hot.
That's hot.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. In 2006, in 2006,
yeah. 2006.
Claremont, who is one of his creators, mm-hmm. and you mentioned already several times, said that he originally intended for Mystique and Destiny to be Nightcrawler's biological parents, but Marvel didn't allow that because of the Comics Code Authority, which prohibited gay or bisexual characters. So it was retconned in 2023 to make it official, make it canon that they were her parents. His parents.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's funny to me the amount of retconning that they do, which of mm-hmm. course they have to. It's the same in the Star Trek universe. Like if something lasts long enough, it's going to be self-contradictory and there's going to be like shit that needs to be updated, especially when they start talking about the future.
Yeah.
Right. But like, I forget which character it was. There's a character who, they recently updated it. So it wasn't Vietnam that led to a bunch of stuff in his life, but rather it was Afghanistan. But they just kind of like did it. You know, there's no like explanation or in-story reason. They just like, that needs some changing timeline wise.
Yeah.
Cause it's been people are hardcore fans about this shit, Kyle, but they were trying to figure out what year is it in the comics. Like if in 1963, when they started, if that's day one, there's like, even though the comics come out weeks or months apart, sometimes they're like the same instant, like the last panel of last week's will be the first panel of this week's.
Right.
So a week has gone by in real life. Zero time at all has gone by in the universe.
Right.
And one person said that it's still like 2003 or some shit like if you string them together that way.
In Star Trek.
In X-Men.
In X-Men.
Yeah.
Oh.
I probably just fucked that up, but like there are people who've taken serious stabs at like pasting it together to figure out like how much in universe time has gone by since the beginning of the franchise.
If I had that level of motivation or care towards anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a bunch of stuff that now like in Star Trek, in the Star Trek world in the 60s, they were making predictions about what was going to be true in the 90s, in the early 2000s. And like, we're there now. And some of that shit.
What is she?
I would love her power.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. She seems like the one you'd pick if you had to pick someone's power.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It would be fun. It would be super fun
mm-hmm.
and sexy as hell.
And so sexy.
I don't know where this fits, so I'm just going to do it now.
Okay.
Batman and Robin, are they gay?
They had those nipples.
Yeah. Yeah. In that one version.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think Robin's gay for Batman.
Okay. He has a daddy thing for Batman.
Yeah.
It feels kind of daddy boy vibes, right?
Yeah.
He's even called the Boy Wonder.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it was that same author. This is why it's in my head. That same author in the 50s that was talking about how shitty comic books are for children was pointing out that Batman at its core is at the very least gender nonconforming. But he was heavily implying that they're gay and that's not great.
Oh, which I think that's why they added. They had Catwoman, but she was kind of evil and they couldn't show a love interest with someone that did bad things. So they introduced Batwoman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think I read something about that.
Okay, Kyle.
Okay.
It's time for a game I made for you.
Okay.
Is the superpower real?
Okay.
Asterisk.
I'm ready.
The asterisk is no superpowers are real, Kyle. Look, are these superpowers? I'm going to name a bunch of characters and their superpowers, or at least some of their superpowers. And I just want you to tell me if this is an actual character that exists in the X-Men universe or not.
Okay.
So
I'm ready.
Just real or fake. That's all you have to decide. Okay. Let's start with, gold balls. He makes gold balls. They are projectiles and or used for transportation.
No way.
You say fake?
Fake.
That is real. Gold balls is a
gold
character.
Balls? Really? Gold balls?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm already doing bad at this game.
You're already doing bad at this game. How about Mammomax? Mammomax is a giant elephant man that can barf acid.
I'll go true.
Correct. He is real.
Okay.
How about Spatula Manifold? Spatula Manifold can summon an infinite variety of spatulas from thin air.
That's the dumbest superpower. False.
Correct. That's fake.
Okay. Did you make that up?
Yeah.
Okay.
next is the Sock Squatch, who has the power to instantly transform any pair of socks into sentient sock-shaped yetis.
That's too weird for you to make. I'm gonna go true.
Nope, that's fake.
Oh, you made that up?
No. Well, I had help with that one.
Okay.
But how about Maggot or Maggot, who has two giant slug-like creatures named Eenie and Meenie that live inside of his stomach?
Ooh, ew, that's gross. I'm gonna go true.
That is real. How about Forget Me Not, who? Everyone forgets he exists because they literally forget him as soon as they look away.
I think true.
Also true.
I think I've heard of that one. Okay.
How about a pocket protector who has the ability to pull any office supply imaginable from a seemingly bottomless pocket protector?
Oh, no. False. That's not
correct.
A good superhero power.
Correct. That's false. And last is iBoy. He has eyes all over his body that have different kinds of sight.
Ew. Poor eye boy. I'll go true.
Also true. You did so good, Kyle.
Oh, wow.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 correct. Only one wrong, the first one.
Wow.
You know your bullshit.
I know my X-Men somehow. I don't.
In the Patreon segment, I'm going to talk about this 31 characters from the Marvel Comics universe that are gay as hell.
Okay. So, yeah, we're going to talk about more gay X-Men in the Patreon segment.
Yeah.
So on Reddit, I found someone on the subreddit Character Rant.
Yeah.
User Beefy Chunky Monkey.
Great.
Says that it's outlandish to compare X-Men to gay people.
Okay.
Okay. They say...
Tell me, straight white man. I'm sure that's what's happening here.
In X-Men, people have a reason to be scared of mutants. They have powers far greater than the average person. Some have powers that could cause the destruction of a city. And I'd imagine watching a guy with razors coming out of his knuckles would be fucking terrifying. The only valid reason for being afraid of gay people is, well, there isn't any, unless you're talking about an individual and not the community as a whole. What do you think about that take, that it's wild to compare X-Men to gay people?
Yeah, that is fucking stupid, and you should have your computer taken away from you.
Why?
Well, okay, so trying to give that nonsense any sort of...
I can understand, like, these people have superpowers that can cause, like, mass destruction and chaos.
Okay, sure. But whether the fear is rational or justified or not does not change the fear and what happens with it. Like, that's why it's a metaphor. Like, it doesn't matter that gay people aren't literally something to be afraid of. Straight people are afraid of us.
Mm.
And they treat us as second-class citizens and behave in ways that are hateful and hurtful and bigoted. So... even though, like, being able to pop your head like a pimple might be literally scary, that's that's it. That's like not that hard. Like what lack of imagination to say that that can't be the same or isn't the same.
I hadn't thought of like the fact that X-Men or mutants can really actually cause destruction is like the way straight people see us, that we can actually, they believe that we actually are these monsters that can cause all this kind of chaos.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that being part of the metaphor there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's at least this election cycle, that's how they're talking.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's literally coming out of their faces that we're trying to harm their children, that we're trying to bring down society because we hate America. Like those are the stakes in their heads.
Yeah. Some of the responses to this were, I think X-Men are a good way to portray minorities and how people treat them on some levels. But when you go deeper into it, it's pure nonsense.
Yeah.
So some people don't see the connection between. Yeah. Another person says, occasionally I can totally see it being an allegory for gay people when a mutant's family doesn't accept them. But beyond that, at the end of the day, if someone finds comfort in the characters, that's cool as fuck and I don't really care why.
So that's agreed.
Another good point of like, for the gay kid that was dying of leukemia,
yep.
If he found something to relate to,
yeah,
what does it matter?
Let's back up just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think anybody saying to anyone, I disagree with the meaning that you have extracted from this fictional piece of art, says a lot about that person and it's fucked up.
Mm.
Like, just let people enjoy the things that they enjoy.
Yeah. You have to be very wrong for me to be like, oh, the meaning you got from that is wrong. Yeah. Like, you have to be super duper wrong about it.
Yeah. And even then, I might just let you be stupid.
That's true. I probably won't. I probably will just go, oh, and then move on.
But right? Like, Star Trek has these people too. There are these holy wars about like who's right and who's wrong about something inside the universe. It's fucking fiction. Like it's not real. It's okay to care about it. It's okay to extract emotions like joy out of what's happening there. But there's no objective truth here for you to like be the arbiter of.
Yeah.
Like get over yourself.
Yeah. Someone said,
get a life, people. That's what William Shatner said on Saturday Night Live about Trekkies, and they almost never forgave him.
Someone said, if you're going to portray it all exactly as it is, it wouldn't be an allegory. It would just be the thing. So I think that's the one I side with, is like this. That's the entire point of allegories, is that they're not the literal thing. They are some kind of representation of it somehow, and it doesn't have to be perfect for it to still be a parallel to the thing.
Are we talking about the Bible?
Yes. Yes. I don't know.
Right?
What?
The whole, like, is it the literal truth? Is it the, like, everything literally happened exactly the way it was? Or is it, like, there's some room for interpretation and nuance?
Well,
and, like,
that if you extract the meaning from the Bible that it's all literally true, then I might say you're stupid. And
I mean, many people do.
Many people do.
They are wrong.
I believe they're stupid.
Oh, God, Kyle. I said I was... Okay. Are we...
Yeah?
Okay. So, my like, weird connection to the X-Men is, in part, that my ex-husband put X-Men on top of our wedding cake.
You sound like it was his... doing. Did you?
I mean, I acquiesced. I went along with it. I thought it was hilarious and cute.
Mm.
And like, it clearly meant a lot to him and means a lot to him. I think a lot of these things that we've touched on today in the episode about like what it means to people were very much true for him. And I don't, do you remember that? You came to our wedding.
Yeah.
Did you have thoughts about that at the time?
No, I just was wondering which one of you was which.
Yeah. I was Cyclops and he was Gambit.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sure X-Men fans know what that means. I don't know what that means. Because he certainly didn't have an accent.
Gambit was always one of my favorites.
Because of the accent?
No, because he was hot.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. I mean, Cyclops is hot too.
That's true.
James Marsden, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Sit on my face.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
But yeah, I don't know. I guess part of my fear, okay, this is deeper than I thought I was going to go on. Ooh. This. Part of my fear is not shame about my love of a thing or someone else's love of a thing in his case, but worried about what other people will think about that enjoyment, that these things are childish, and for a 45-year-old man to be into sci-fi is childish and makes me somehow less than. Or comic books as another example. And I don't know how to be over that, and I wonder, is that like, is that internalized homophobia coming out in a weird way? Is that like, it, how do I not care? Because I want to be the type of person that doesn't give a fuck what people think about what I do. If I love it, I love it. Fuck them. And I just can't. I can't stop.
Hmm. I know. I understand what you mean. Like, especially as you get older, then it's like, it's always, oh, I'm an insert age here person that loves this thing. Like, at what point does it become not okay for us to love the things we love? You know?
I would hope the answer is never.
No, that's the ideal. Yeah.
But
societally, that might not be true.
Yeah. I still play video games. When does that become not okay? I don't know. Hopefully never, but.
Isn't that like the thing that straight, married, cis dudes are like jealous that you can play video games? Like, isn't that like secretly everyone wants to have this kind of life or have this kind of interest, and they just can't because they have a family and have all this other stuff going on? Like, aren't they jealous?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I think I've said before, my brother said that to me early on after I came out. He's like, I kind of wish I was gay, because being with a dude would be great. You can just play video games in your underwear and not get harassed by your wife or whatever, right? And some of that is like sitcom, I hate my wife comedy. Yeah. Bullshit. But also, like, yeah, there's like, by virtue of the fact that we're gay, I think we get to color outside the lines even more of what society sort of expects. And if it's beneath a happily married man with kids to play video games, we're not beholden to those same rules or constraints. So
I also think, like, you know, when your fear in life is being gay and not being accepted, and, you know, you have to, or like being harassed or what have you, just for being who you are, then like to like video games is like so low on our radar of like what's important. Like, oh, I just like video games and want to play them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's just, it comes easier to like and be interested in those things with less fear or judgment.
Yeah.
Because the real, like, you're worried about real things, like the bigger things.
Yeah.
You know, like about acceptance of your identity and shame around that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah,
I do think, I also think we've grown up to, I think you said, internalized homophobia, and yeah, we're grown up being ashamed of who we are.
Yeah.
So it might make sense that you'd carry that over and like maybe still fear that people will see who you are. And I don't know what the rational fear is, but the irrational fear is that they won't accept you or they'll judge you.
The same projection of worried that my dad would see Cyclops and Gambit on top of my wedding cake and harshly judge my ex-husband and our relationship because he associated that childishness with frivolousness. I feel like I'm betraying my ex, if not myself, by feeling that way at all. And I recognize it as being, and I want to change it. I hate it. Like, it feels like a betrayal. And I noticed that I feel the same thing when it comes to my current relationship and our age difference. We have a significant age difference. And so I worry not about what that's like between us, because between us, it's fine. Better than fine. It's great. He's wonderful. But this constant nagging, oh my God, what do other people think about this and what it means?
Yeah.
God, I wish I could get rid of that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to.
I think part of one of the first steps might be like acceptance of the feeling. Like you have the feeling that doesn't, that's not a reflection of you, of anything bad or negative. You just have the feeling of worry or, you know, whatever you insert the emotion that you have. And that's okay. Mm. It's okay to have that feeling. That's a normal feeling to have. So like making it, normalizing that it's okay to feel that. I think is one step, because you said like even having the feeling makes you feel bad, but you can't control what feelings you have. And
right.
So it's okay for that feeling to, now to linger on it or to, you know, to amplify it or to stew on it. Like those are all things that are more within your control. So how do you learn to move past the feeling or let it wash away? Like I imagine through therapy, I've imagined like emotions on a boat that just like wash down the shore, and it's like, oh, I felt that just then, and now it's gone.
Yeah,
you know, letting things flow by in a river.
Not me, man. I grab onto the side of that boat and I let it pull me into the water and drown me.
I know how that feels for sure. So yeah, normalizing that it's okay to feel that way, and that doesn't say anything about you just having that feeling.
Everybody should be in therapy always for every reason, yeah. Especially me.
Yeah, betterhelp.com/gayish.
Yeah. Did we do it?
Yeah.
Any more X-Men thoughts? I feel like, okay, this space is huge. As I was preparing for this today, I was like, how do I cut this down to like a reasonable amount of content to cover? Because it really is a huge, rich, lucrative mine filled with ore for our podcast.
Yes,
gold.
Sure. Sure. Yep. Agreed.
I feel like we could do a whole another hour on it for sure.
Oh yeah.
Easy.
Yeah, we can. But in the Patreon, we're going to pick some other gay X-Men and talk about them.
Yeah.
And that'll be fun. I like X-Men. I like the idea behind it. I like the powers. I like the art. I think it's cool.
Yeah. So should we take a break?
Yeah, let's take an X-Men break.
Let's take a break.
A laser eye break.
An eye boy break.
This is the part where Mike and Kyle take a break.
Are we back?
We're back.
We're back.
We're going to do our gayest and straightest.
Shazam! We're going to do our gayest and straightest. But first, our website is gayishpodcast.com.
We're on socials at gayishpodcast, or you can go find out where our Discord and our Facebook group is at gayishpodcast.com/contact.
Our hotline. You can send us text messages or leave us voicemails. It's 5855-GAYISH. That's 585-542-9474. Standard rate supply.
Our email is gayishpodcast@gmail.com.
And our physical mailing address is Post Office Box 19882, Seattle, Washington, 98109. Hey!
Hey!
Listen to me.
Okay.
Rate, review, subscribe, and recommend, you motherfuckers.
Yeah, please.
Tell them why they should care, Kyle, because I'm done with them. They upset me.
Yeah, you motherfuckers. because it helps us when you recommend to a friend. It helps grow the show, and that helps get more awesome content out to you and your ear holes. And we appreciate it. You've been listening. You care. You're here at the very end of the episode, so we know you care enough for that. So it can just take a few minutes to rate or text this to a friend or say to someone, hey, you might like this show.
Listen to Kyle, get off your ass and do something.
Yeah, please.
Damn it.
Please.
All right. You ready for a gayest?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go.
Okay, great.
My gayest is making out with a boy at a gay bar.
Yeah. I love that so much.
Yeah.
You seem like maybe not a public makeout kind of girl, but like here you are.
I don't think I am really, but I guess I am because I did it. Yep. I don't know that I've done it a few times with a boy that I'm kind of seeing.
Great.
And then my straightest is watching the movie Adaptation.
Oh,
with some friends.
Why was that straight?
Because there was nothing gay about the movie.
Oh,
there was no gay anything. Nicolas Cage, he's not a particularly gay. Meryl Streep, she's gay icon, but. It just was a very straight movie in my mind.
Yeah. Okay.
Now it was with a bunch of homosexuals in the audience, but
yeah.
But the movie itself, I thought was pretty straight.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree, but okay. Yeah. The straightest thing about me this week is meeting with a financial planner.
Oh.
I just feel like planning for retirement and the future is a luxury for straight people to consider. Like.
Yeah.
Most gays are like their retirement plan is blowing all their cash at Fire Island or whatever. So And then the gayest thing about me this week, I talked about boyfriend and I are going to go with a group of people to Japan. I forget if it was this, if it was the main episode or the Patreon episode, but anyway, going to Japan this fall. But looking at all the gay options for the Japan is like, it's interesting, but also it just feels super gay being like, what kind of gay experience do I want to have in Japan?
Yeah. Curating a gay experience.
And the answer is, it's probably hard to do. They don't like foreigners.
Oh.
Apparently, you're like not welcome in most gay bars in Japan.
Oh. Yeah. I didn't know that. That
I sucks. Didn't know that either. I want to be fetishized. okay. This week, we have a listener's gay and straightest. It was sent to us via voicemail, which is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Call in yours. Dear listener, 5855 gayish, but here's this one.
Hi, this is John from Long Beach. I wanted to share my gayest and straightest this week. We hosted a party. We had 8 gay friends. We had a great time drinking, eating, singing songs around the piano, playing board games. It was a really great evening. Everybody had a good time. And my straightest this week is that I went to the hardware store, I bought a new toilet seat, and installed it myself to replace the one that someone broke at the party.
Well, thank you for that, John.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely think Akiki is, that's up there in the gay things that you could do, but like in the straightest category, plumbing, a winner.
Yep.
Every absolutely. Time.
Absolutely. Well, thank you to Derek for requesting this episode.
Yeah, and thank you to all of the fictional people that are gay.
Yep.
Or a gay analog.
And thank you to the real people that are, I don't know, either gay or care enough to support gay shit. Thank you to our Super Cat Bridgers. Thank you to Kaylee Adams, Kit Oliver, Pip, Andrew Bugby, William Bryant, John Crowley, Stephen Porcio, Stossel, Harry Shaw, Jonathan Montanez, Wadu Forestnail, Patrick Martin, Steve Douglas, Explosive Lasagna, Michael Covington, Just Jamie, Thomas B., Dusty Sands, A.E. Coleman, Chris Kachatorians, and Jerome York. Thank you for your support.
Thank you for your money. That's it. This has been Gayish from the Chris Cacciatorian Studios. I'm Mike Johnson.
I'm Kyle Getz. Until next week, be butch, be fabulous, be you.
Be X.
Be extra. Bye.
Extra, extra. Our hotline, you can send us testament. My fucking teeth, Kyle. These Invisalign things. This tray is particularly difficult to talk with.
You're doing a real good job.
Thanks.